And welcome back, everybody. It's another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 858. Gonna talk some starting pitchers, some good, the bad, and kind of ugly in the month of May using the Fangraphs Player Rater. And in order to help me discuss about 20 pitchers or so on tonight's episode is a friend of ours, a friend of yours, a friend of the show. You can find him, of course, on the Sleeper and the Buzz. He's one of the top, I'd say top five, I was gonna say top 10, top five mustache people in all of baseball. He's got the on Twitter at Spore. You guys all know him, Paul Spore. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing very well, Bubba. Thank you so much for having me on, and thank you for the compliment on the mustache. I'm not sure I agree, but I'm going to take the compliment for sure, and I'm going to run with it.
It's coming. It's strong, man. It is a strong.
Trying to fill it out. You know, just let it keep growing.
Just let it breathe, baby. Let it breathe. Before we get started, I know most people, if all that listen to the show, know who you are, but let everybody know what you got going on, as you're always busy.
Sure. I'm over at Fangraphs on the Rotographs side. You just go to fangraphs.com, check out the fantasy side. I do the SP chart every day, Monday through Friday. I update my SP rankings. The new ones were supposed to be out today, but I got too tired. They're going to be out tomorrow. Don't worry, Friday morning, in fact. I do the Sleeper in the Bus podcast with Justin Mason, Joe Rico, and I'm also the content developer over at Out of the Park Baseball, and they have a game mode called Perfect Team, which uses virtual cards of real players throughout history to create teams, and you go against other people. It's pretty convoluted to get into, but the idea of it is if you played like Diamond Dynasty for MLB The Show or any Ultimate Team version on your EA games, that's our version of that, and I'm the one who makes all the cards for that. So it's really fun. I get to nerd out over baseball literally all the time. I'm digging in, finding weird players. I've learned so much from that job about baseball history, and I've become a much bigger fan of baseball history than I used to be. I kind of used to just kind of go back to the 60s at the latest because that's what my dad would always tell me about. It's like 60s and on was all I cared about. Now I'm all the way in it. And I watch the baseball documentary every year, the Ken Burns one. And I just love that I know more players every time I watch it. They'll bring up some guy from, you know, 1910. I'm like, I know who that is. And I can say, you know, three or four things about the guy. So I've become a gigantic baseball history nerd because of that role with OOTP.
That's awesome. Yeah, like I dabbled in OOTP during COVID, like many of us did, looking for a fix, of course. Time is of the essence for me these days, so I haven't, but I know you've been involved with it for a long time. I just, for some reason, didn't know you did the cards. That's awesome. That's really, really cool.
It's really fun. Yeah. Super intensive job. Like, you can get lost in the research for hours, but I truly love that. Like, that is the fun of it, digging in on Fangraphs and Baseball Reference and really turning over the rocks and finding, like, who are these players? And one thing you learn is, like, you know, the phrase about how history repeats itself, right? Like, that's kind of a global phrase about all history. It's especially so in baseball, right? The game is obviously way different now than it was 100 years ago. And yet you can find damn near every player type we have today. You can find a version of them back then. Maybe not too many super strikeout studs, but even back in the early 1900s, yep. Bubba, you'd be surprised. There's some guys lurking out there striking out 8-9 per game, which for back then is massive. Yes. And even for today would at least be all right. Nowadays, you know, we're looking at guys striking out double digits, 10-12 per nine, because we got some sicko rates going. But that part boggles my mind every time I see, like, that we had every player type back then, you know, all throughout history. So anyway, I could go about baseball history for like 10 hours, but neither of us got time for that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I got stories with you. Yeah, we maybe need to sit down at FPAS and chat about
that's
a great spot for it.
Yes. Yeah, I should peel open my laptop, start getting y'all an OOTP, and we go nerding out for the winter with it, because that's when you can get your fix too while we're waiting for baseball to come back.
100%. But we're talking starting pitchers, like I said here, and I just did the simple look at the Fangraphs Player Rater last 30 days. It was roughly the month of May. I was like a day or two late, so you guys got the drift of this one. But I basically took outliers of 10 pitchers that maybe surprised us. They had big Mays, great Mays, and then 10 that we usually expect big things from and not so much in the month of May. So we're going to chat about it here and kind of, you know, we got 4 months of the season to go. We got to start making our decisions in our fantasy teams. It's kind of Esther get off the pot moments around here. And so we need to know, is this a problem to run away from, or are we good? So we're going to start with a nemesis of mine that my former co-host Toby Batflip Crazy gave me crap for years, because he's all, Bubba, you love 140 whips, don't you? Because I always loved Eduardo Rodriguez. Like, that was me the too. Thing. I thought he was just joking, but it literally was 140 almost every single season with E-Rod. It was just perfect. But in the month of May, it's like, I know there's some smoke and mirrors here, but it, I need someone to keep me off of this one, because I've stayed away, but it's been troublesome. Erod, he made five starts in May. He allowed five runs in those five starts. The strikeouts were much better. Walks were not as big of an issue as usual. Only one home run in the entire month of May. So what I ask you, Mr. Sporer, how much should we believe in these, I guess, improvements from Eduardo Rodriguez?
So a bit, right? Like, I'm an Eduardo guy too, and it was just way before he became a Tiger when I actually ended up liking him more. He wasn't like amazing with the Tigers, but I like him as a dude too. He seems to be a pretty level dude. But I always thought he's a good pitcher who's maybe even better than the results. And he did have his best year ever with the Tigers, so it was nice to see him really come through there in 2023. Hasn't really been able to recapture that since. The simple fact is, though, I didn't think he was as bad as 24 and 25. The fact is, we play deeper leagues, so he's been on our radar still these last couple of years, while the 10 and 12 team interest has definitely faded. That is back. I think you should now at least be looking at him as what I like to call a team streamer, which is to say, you stream him, but you don't cut him every time, because you can't put him back out on the wire right now. I think he's too good to do that, because we're talking about how well Erod pitched in May. He opened up the month on June 1st with a gem against the Dodgers, six innings, one run. The funny thing about that one homer that he allowed, he went to Coors, he faced the Pirates, which is actually a pretty tough offense to face these days, and he faced those Dodgers that I talked about, and the homer was at your Giants, which is just kind of hilarious. And the poetic weirdness of baseball. But yeah, he's been awesome, and he really took advantage of a good schedule there. Again, I had a few tough ones. Going to Coors is always tough, no matter how bad they are, and like I said, Pittsburgh's a decent offense, although their strength comes from the left side, so he, of all people, is actually pretty well equipped to handle them. Team streamer status is as far as we're getting right now, though. Don't go too crazy here. We're still seeing pretty modest skills from Erod. I think you're still looking out ahead to see how many, you know, what his future starts look like. And once the schedule starts to get tough and we see a bad start or two, we probably peel back. But right now, this was a two-step this week. It was a tough one, though, and I didn't have him cooking the Dodgers like this. It was Dodgers, Washington, both at home, two very good teams. I was very afraid of it. Well, he's kind of already set himself up with the Dodgers start. If I were in a daily league, I probably would skip the Washington start. But then at Cincinnati next week, I would run that. I know Great American Ballpark is difficult, but Cincy's lineup just not scary right now. So it's kind of start to start with Erod. But right now, he's consistently getting play in 15s and 12s and at least on the board in your 10-teamers.
Yeah, I picked him up in an OC a couple of weeks ago, and I'm doing just what you're doing. I love the phrase. I've used something similar to that with Ryan many times. Bench streamer is what I call
yes,
it.
Same idea. I never thought no. I made up the concept. I just tried to put a name to it.
I'm just getting full agree. Like, we're on the same page with this one. And it's like, I have certain rosters. I talked with the guilds last week on the show. This time of the year, like, you know, people like to say, what's the proper bench, you know, 4-3-3, whatever. Mm-hmm. I have some 6-1 pitchers, because I just want a bunch of bench streaming pitchers in 15s, because it's so bad out there. Erod is a great bench streamer. And I think I started him in one OC and not the other, because this was a terrifying week to start him. But teams will dictate how you do things.
Absolutely. And I will say, after the Cincinnati start, you get the Angels and then an interesting two-step at St. Louis and at Tampa Bay. Neither team screams run away with lefties, but neither really strikes out either. And he's already a little light on the case. We can deal with that down the road. That's 3 weeks out. But the schedule is staying pretty nice for him after this two-step. So if you sat Erod this week, or if somebody cut him because they were too afraid of the two-step in a shallower format, I can't imagine him getting cut in a 12 or 10 or a 12 or 15 with as good as he's been pitching. But I could see him on some 10 wires. I'd pick up Erod right now.
Yep, full agree on that one. Let's head to Sacramento, to JT Jen, who made six starts in May, and absolutely dealt outside of the first start. Basically five straight really great starts, two runs or less in all five starts. He racked up a 2.6 ERA, 33 Ks, 17 walks. The walks are a bit of an issue, mainly in two of those six starts. By the time this show comes out, he's got a windy night in Wrigley. This could be a null and void point that we're going to make, but the pitching is dreadful in Sacramento. Like, you know, we saw Gage jump throw a gem on Monday, much needed for fantasy players and the A's, but that whole rotation, like Jack Perkins, is getting stretched out. They keep calling guys up, and the AAA is depleted when it comes to Sacramento. So where are we at on JT Jen? It feels like you might be going similar to Erod on this one, but are you believing in the skills we're seeing with him, I guess, is the important part.
Yeah, I think we've seen some more bankable skills from him, namely with the homers being cut. Now, is that something that's going to sustain at home as the weather gets warmer? Probably not. But he's down under one for the first time in his career at 0.91. And it isn't some tiny homer to fly ball ratio, because that's usually what I look at next. And if it's somebody holding like a 4% homer to fly ball, I'm like, well, that's going to regress. He's at 11%. That's about league average. Now, he was at 22 last year, which was way too high for JT Ginn. So I think that if he can live at this 11% and keep the homers in check, we can live with these walks. Definitely another team streamer. I will say, the player class where the team streamer is somebody that you never want to start at home is scary, because everyone is just generally better at home as a rule. You're more comfortable. It's your home ballpark. You're used to it. Obviously, there's exceptions like Rockies pitchers or whatever, but also Athletics pitchers is another exception that we've come to see these past couple years. And I think he fits that because he does have a 3.96 ERA at home, Ginn does. And you might say, well, that's not so bad. I can live with that. But it goes back to the Erod whip that you were talking about. Who was it? Toby making fun of you for. It's a 156 whip, and that will bludgeon you. You cannot take that. So there's trouble brewing at home. So again, I'm pulling out the schedule for Ginn, and I'm making my decisions based on that. You mentioned that he has at Chicago tonight with the wind blowing out. That's terrifying. I wouldn't have started him this week. We'll see how this goes. He gets Milwaukee next week. That's at home. Very scary.
That's in Vegas.
I don't think I can do it. That's at Vegas. That's even worse.
Three games, yeah. The A's Milwaukee to start the week is Las Vegas, which is like playing on the moon.
Yeah. So. And then after that, it's a two-step at home, Pittsburgh and the Angels. So this is the conundrum that we run into with him. There are some intriguing skills. There are some things I do believe, but when are you using him? So he is a team streamer, but the usage is light. And if you can't afford to only play somebody halftime, then maybe Ginn isn't the one for you.
And that's been my biggest problem with him. Like, I streamed him for the two-step a week or so ago, and we all enjoyed that. That was great. But then, the upcoming schedule's not looking great for Mr. JT Ginn, and we could probably add him later on and see where it goes.
Right.
Spencer Arrigetti, this is one that everybody, or many, were looking forward to returning from the IL. And you know, if you're looking for ERA, you've got that from Spencer Arrigetti. You've also got a ton of walks from Spencer Arrigetti. Now, the last two outings, including his June 3rd outing, was one walk, but he also gave up a grand slam in that game for the most runs he's allowed all season. Like, we're talking in his sixth start since coming off the IL, Paul, 25 strikeouts, 18 walks over 33 innings pitched. And you're looking at, like, the Babbitt. There's a lot of things pointing to some maybe problems coming up with Spencer Arrigetti. What are your thoughts on him?
I am completely there with you on him and the impending doom of whip. Again, we're going to hit another theme here with the potentially troublesome whip. He's riding a 227 BABIP right now, and it just won't last. He can be on the better end of it. He had a 250 last year, although that was only 35 innings. I think he has enough nastiness to be somebody who beats the league average. He's a 289 career. He could be like a 270 something, which would be pretty nice. 227 is a far cry from that. And with the walks, as the hits regress, that whip is going to skyrocket. And then Arrigetti becomes that player class that I think is very dangerous. The guy who can tote a sub 4 ERA, but has that 1.3, 1.4 type whip that can be really dangerous. I've always said that the other side of that, the guy who has like a 4.10 ERA, but like a 1.20 or lower whip, I think that player class is super underrated. This Arrigetti player class can be overrated. I think the biggest issue for me, the reason that I'm going to fade him and say try to get out from under this right now, where's the punchies? Remember when he first broke in, 27% K rate that got us really excited that, sure, you're going to walk a bunch, but he was looking like another Lance McCullers, a nasty guy who can miss bats and you kind of deal with the whip. But if he's not bringing the Ks, then he's just bludgeoning your whip and you're only getting the ERA and maybe some win upside. And I will say their offense has faded after a really fast start to where I don't even trust them for that. I am trying to get out from under this. I think he pitched well. Was it today or yesterday against Pittsburgh? He gets the Angels next week, which is great. You can stick with that one. But after that, I think you should start looking to trade him. Not necessarily because it's my Tigers after that, but just because the longer you let it go, the more the regression will come and the price will go down. I think right now you can get a mint for him, relatively speaking, because he was a waiver pickup or a very late pick. And if you have enough pitching to do that, I think you should look to move Arrigetti. Chances are you're holding on for dear life. You got four guys on the IL and he's saving you right now. I understand it's probably difficult for people to trade him, but understand that whip trouble is coming in the future.
Yeah, very much so. And I'm glad you mentioned the strikeout part. Like, we're talking 25 Ks and 33 innings. That is dreadful stuff. Like, we're going to talk about some other guys we expect it from pretty soon, but not Spencer Arrighetti, which is a shame. And weirdly enough, they kind of have reinforcements coming soon. Like, there's guys rehabbing in the rotation that I'm not saying they're kicking Arrighetti out anytime soon, but if he continues to start walking the farm, there might be some questions to be had, at least.
Especially, if it goes sideways and he is, you know, toting that sort of 1-4 whip for an extended period of time, I wouldn't be surprised if they transition, you know, him either into like long relief where he's getting multiple innings or getting starts skipped. They would probably do something to address it in some way once they get reinforcement. So I think that's a good call about the Astros and Arrighetti.
All right, this one was baffling to me when I saw it on the Fangraphs Player Rater, and that's Zach Lytle. and there's two reasons. First, I'm going to give his April starts or March and April starts. He made 5 starts. He allowed 25 earned runs, 31 runs, in 28 and two-thirds innings with only 16 strikeouts, 11 walks, and more importantly, Zach Lytle had 13 home runs in those 5 starts.
Jeez.
Like, I remember in DFS, it was literally like a home run party every week. You saw him, you started people against him. That's why this surprised me when I saw the month of May, Paul. And he made 3 starts. He was behind an opener and a couple because I think they got wise to the situation here, but made 6 appearances, 8 earned runs over 30 and two-thirds innings for a 2.35 ERA, 19 Ks. So the Ks went up, walks went down to 8. More importantly, 2 home runs in the entire month of May. Now, again, sustainability, massive question. That ballpark in Washington plays very hitter-friendly in the summertime. Mm-hmm. But what's your thoughts on Lytle? Because literally, we've talked about guys improving, showing different skills, this and that. This has been 2 completely different months from Zach Lytle.
It really has, and I never cease to be amazed by this in baseball, these sort of in-season transformations where a guy looks like he has no business even playing the game professionally to then being an absolute stud for a run. And it happens mostly with pitchers. You see that sort of immediate changeover like that more so than you do hitters. But yeah, like, this is two totally different guys. And there's a little bit of viability here because the home runs have come way back down. With only 2 in these 30 and two-thirds for May, that gives Zach Lytle something to kind of cling to. It is still only 19 Ks in 31 innings, though. And so you're looking at the juxtaposition of the 2.35 ERA against the 3.59 FIP. I understand you might want to believe in a 3.59 FIP and say, I would take that as an ERA. That's not exactly how that's working with the FIP. It's telling you that he's about a run worse than these skills. But once the skills regress, because I think that home run rate, I will agree that April was not who he is either. He's not a 3 homer per 9 type of guy. I don't think anybody truly is, but I also don't think he's like a half homer per 9 either. I would look at last year's 1.7 or even take the last 3 years coming into this year at 1.5 and work off of that. Anybody toting a 1.5, if they're not striking out the world with it, they're not making my team. If you got some of this magic carpet ride, thank your lucky stars and get off before trouble comes.
Yeah, there's another pitcher. I actually don't have him on the list, but Nick Martinez, magic carpet, right?
Yes.
Came to a crashing halt.
By my Tigers, believe it or not, which was surprising because of how horrendously we've been playing.
Yeah, I write up daily matchups twice a week for HQ, and I've somehow had Martinez's last 2 starts. And I remember like 2 starts ago, just completely blasting him, basically. Like, and he throws another gem. So then I'm like, okay, maybe he survives because the Tigers are struggling, and then boom, Tigers go off.
I did the same thing with him. I was like, yeah, like, I know this won't hold forever, but he's going to cook my clown-ass Tigers. And then they go and sweep them. They played excellently during that series. I doubt it'll be the catalyst for anything. But honestly, at this point, I'm just hoping that the Scooble surgery works and that they can get a mint for him. I've given up on the season being turned around at this point.
I totally understand those sentiments. But one last thing on Zach. Is it Lytle? I always screw it up.
I think it's Lytle. Let me see if B-Rex
comes. I'm like the Eno Saris of your guys' show.
No problem. You're way better than him. So, and I worked with him for years. So I feel like I can handle anybody's pronunciations. Yeah, it's L-A-H hyphen tell on B-Rex. So that's going to be Lytle as far as I'm concerned.
But just the last thing I want to mention is, like, I loved him for DCs because he's like last 3 years, 3.6 to 4.1 ERA. You could live with
bankable.
That. And the whip was 1.10 to 1.25, like all totally within range. And his K to walk was 16% or better 2 out of the 3 years. Like, these are things you can live with. So I'm just echoing to your point, the player we maybe should expect in between what we saw the last 2 years, which, absolutely, you know, in deeper formats or in, you know, daily leagues, you might find the right matchups to string them. Just don't pray for a lot of strikeouts, I guess. Anthony Kay of the Chicago White Sox. This has been a guy I've had a really tough time figuring out because he doesn't look like domination to me at all when I see him pitch. But results are speaking for themselves, at least in the month of May. It was 2 earned runs or less in all 6 of his starts in May. Start for 7 earned runs over 32 and a third innings, 1.95 ERA, but only 27 Ks, 10 walks in those 32 and a third innings. He does come from the left side. White Sox need starting pitching, so you don't have to worry about his job. But what are we thinking when it comes to a guy like Anthony Kay, again, coming from overseas this year, whole different setup for him?
I was intrigued by Kay. I was intrigued by that whole group coming from overseas. They all had their merits. And again, you and I, as a general rule, play a lot of deeper leagues. We're in a lot of 15s and even 12s that have deeper rosters. So they play closer to maybe 13, 14 teams, which means we really care about, you know, fourth, fifth starters in the White Sox rotation. So, you know, he was on my radar as somebody to keep an eye on. I want to get there. I like that he's got the 3.77 ERA, but I'm, you know where I'm going to go. Look at that whip. It's 140. Yep. And the core skills here are why I just can't get behind this. As much as I liked that month, and I even, because I got him in some DCs thinking that he could be a nice little volume guy because I thought they would commit to him. And I even used some of these starts. You know, once he had the first couple good starts, I was like, well, I'm going to put him in for the rest of the month. So that's great, but I know the bottom's going to fall out on this because the skills just aren't particularly special. They're better than they were in the first month, but when you're looking at a 20% K rate in today's game, that's just not going to cut it. That's just too much contact that you're leaving yourself at the mercy of getting lucky. Right now, he is. And I don't even want to say like super lucky. It's not like he's living on a wire there with a 276 BABIP. But when you allow that much contact and you're not super dominating, it could be back up at 295, 300 in no time. That's about league average. So there's trouble brewing here. This is another one where I'm going to look at the Sierra at 474. I'm going to use that as the baseline. I think he's about a 474 to 5 ERA true talent. And that means that he's more of a standard streamer in 15 teamers, where if something comes up and the schedule looks pretty good, I can take a shot. But there's another one where I think it's a bit of a magic carpet ride that you really want to be careful with. Like he's going to Philly this weekend. I know that they have sucked. And yes, even as their record has turned, it hasn't been the offense. It's been Sanchez not allowing any runs for 60 innings and Zach Wheeler coming back. But the offense still scares me enough to not run guys like Anthony Kay against them. And then it's Atlanta after that who scares me even more. And then guess what? It somehow gets almost worse after that, depending if Judge is okay, because he goes to New York. So that's 3 in a row that I don't want anything to do with here before you get to the two-step, which actually does become pretty appealing at the end of the month, Cleveland and KC at home. I wouldn't roster him all the way until then, though, especially in a 10 or 12. No way. But even in a 15, I don't know that I'm necessarily holding Anthony Kay all the way through that, because who's going to pick him up for Atlanta and New York, right? Let them, if they really want to do that. So I'd kind of let him go, see how these three starts go, and then maybe revisit him for that potential two-step if the schedule holds.
Yeah, I'm always a fan of getting a guy a week early for a buck or two instead of doing the two-step fight the week of and seeing where it goes. If you can stash them, then it's much more appealing to me. All right. I'm really curious what the Cubbies are about to do, because Edward Cabrera returns on Friday. Matthew Boyd has one more rehab start. He returns next week. Ben Brown joined the rotation for the Cubs when Matthew Boyd went down with his knee injury. Ben Brown has made 5 starts. He got stretched out. His last 3 have been 5 innings or more. He's allowed 5 runs in 26 innings, 29 Ks, 7 walks. I just wrote him up for something before the show. Strikeout rate over those starts alone, it's like 13.4% strike is like 13.4%. He's getting guys to chase like almost 40% of the time. He's been filthy, absolutely filthy. And we always wondered if he could do it with only 2 pitches. That was always the concern with him. I think he's working on his third, but he's making it look very good, Paul. So what are your thoughts on Ben Brown? Because I would assume the Cubs would be insane to pull him from the rotation right now, but we've seen crazier things.
We have, but they can't. You know, their pitching has actually been a nightmare right now, and part of why they've had a few big slumps here that have countered their big winning streaks from earlier. So they've had a really weird season. I think they have like 3 10-game streaks of wins or losses already in the year, which I don't think has ever happened. They'd have 2 10-game winning streaks and 2 10-game losing streaks or something, or 3 combined.
I saw a stat today. They had an 18-game home winning streak earlier this year, and they're currently on a 9-game home losing streak.
Insane. And they could lose tonight because Shota's pitching with the wind blown out, like you mentioned. Yep. And of course, you know, the wind's blown out for both teams. So JT Ginn's going to have to keep it in the yard. But like, that could be a high scoring affair tonight. So I'm with you. There's no way they can take him out. He's just been pitching far too well. He has to stay in. Ben Brown does over Jameson Taillon, over Colin Ray. So even with Cabrera coming back, he should hold. He's been a revelation, as you mentioned. He sort of has three pitches if you break up the two fastballs, but that's not that unique of a look that I'm with you. I still think it is a two-pitch guy, fastball, curveball with a show-me change. But when it's peaking, like we've seen with guys like Strider before, when they're both really cooking, it can absolutely work. And it is right now. He is riding hot, though, too. Now, just because we like him and, you know, we think he's got a lot of skills behind what he's doing doesn't mean that we ignore a 244 BABIP and a 3% homer to fly ball rate. Both of those are exceedingly good, and they generally don't last at that level for anybody. So there's going to be some regression. Hardly anybody, quote unquote, earns a 192 ERA, but I think he's a true talent, low threes guy with great strikeouts and strong win potential on a good team. Well, decent win potential. I don't love their bullpen. I like their offense. I know it's struggling a bit right now, but I think the Cubs offense will be fine. The bullpen does scare me, so I'll go with all right win potential, but I like Ben Brown. I'm riding this till the wheels fall off right now. And unless they kick him out of the rotation and force a move for me, even if that happens, though, I would not cut him instantly. No. Wait to see what happens, because the second that you cut him because they say he's going to get a start skipped and be out of the rotation, somebody gets hurt 4 days later and he's right back in. So do not let go of Ben Brown if they get foolish and say that he's not going to start or something like that. This is an asset that you want to have on your team right now. I love Ben Brown.
Full agree. Like, this is make a six-man rotation if you have to.
Absolutely.
Keep him in it. But and the other part is, you know, I said Edward Cabrera is coming back Friday. Paul, we've played this game long enough. He had a blister. Do those come back?
Exactly.
Do those come back at all? Just get, throw that one out there real quick.
That's a great point. So he could be He could be the guy who immediately goes right back out. And he himself, Cabrera, has had other issues too. I hope he stays healthy. I'm certainly not wishing
we're not rooting
on
for
him.
Injuries. It's just realistic about this.
Yeah, we know the deal with him. We can see the track record that he has. So, you know, hopefully he can stay healthy, give them another arm. They really need some reinforcements. But Ben Brown has been a revelation for them. I had dreams of Ben Brown and Cade Horton really pushing this team to, I was all in on Cade Horton. So I'm super bummed by that. At least one piece of it has come to fruition. And Ben Brown has helped me not sob constantly at the fact that Scooble is off of my main event team right now.
Well, he'll be back next week for you. So you're good.
I know, which is crazy.
It's insane. That's a whole other podcast for itself that's happening. Walbert Urania. This has been a laughing point between myself and Ryan every single week. Because I fully understand there's a lot of, like, I guess, quote unquote, luck with what Urania's doing,
right?
But I'm eating it all up.
I'm with you.
He made six starts in May. He's even made a start on against the Road Rockies yesterday on June 3rd. 9 earned runs over 39 innings pitched, 35 Ks to 18 walks, and that's one thing I want to point out, because control's an issue. I've been comparing him this whole season. He is the younger Jose Soriano. Maybe the current one, actually, right now, what we've seen him, who we'll talk about later on this show. Very similar. They can strike out some guys. They could have some walk issues. Big ground ball rate. So where are you at on Walbert Urania going forward?
I echo so much of what you say. I'm trying to find a different way to say it, basically, because, yeah, like, I love the Soriano comp. I was throwing it out earlier. I gave him a little mention when I wrote up the second half of starting pitching rotations for the front page of Fangraphs when we do our positional preview rankings. He didn't have a role or anything yet. I said, just keep an eye on him. I don't know if they're going to put him in the rotation, but he's a live arm who's super nasty, and if he can figure out how to miss some bats, he could be something. Mike Maddux has got them pitching better. He can't fix it all overnight, but he's got that team pitching more competently. They are in some good hands. So that's what's keeping me interested in Walbert Urania. And I've mentioned a few times that you and I generally play a lot of deeper leagues, not necessarily exclusively, but we're in a lot of deeper league scenarios where guys like Walbert Urania are really interesting to kind of keep on your roster. He's a 10-team streamer, though. Standard streamer. I don't think you have to hold him through every start because his win potential is very low. Yeah, I know he got Rocky Road, as you mentioned. That's great. But basically them and a couple other teams are the only ones where he's going to be a favorite ever. So you got low win potential. You get strikeouts on occasion. That like Soriano of previous years, and even like you said recently, they go in and out. 6K sometimes, 1K another time. That's part of being a ground ball guy, though, right? When you're getting all these ground balls and you're getting three and out, I know that's a football term, but you're getting three pitches and out, You're still doing very well. You're just not giving us the fantasy goodness that we want. So it is good, but at the same time, you would prefer the strikeouts just because that's more bankable way to have success. Missing bats is what drives success. At least his swinging strike rate is up, though. It's at 12%. I can live with that, even if the strikeout rate is only 22%. This is a buy profile. He's 22 years old. Anything keeper dynasty, I'm totally in. But even in redraft leagues, this is an asset I want to hold and kind of play him as a team streamer the best I can. But like I said, in your 10-teamers, I don't think you need to be bending over backwards to keep Urania.
And even in 12s, he could be a bench guy.
Agreed.
Like a bench stream, like he's not a much. In 15s, you're probably starting the guy. But
I think in 15s, you probably don't have much of a choice but starting him.
100%. This was a profile I'm very, very intrigued by. And it's Roky Sasaki. And I bought in for the two-step like 3 weeks ago. And okay, there's some improvements, good matchups. Let's see. I've held on since. Roky Sasaki's made 5 starts in May, Paul. He's allowed 10 earned runs and 28 and a third for a 3.18 ERA. Palatable. 28 Absolutely. Strikeouts to 6 walks, so a K per inning, essentially. Obviously, opposite Walbert Urania, lots of win equity where he's at. It pains me to say that. But I think we're seeing – it's a shocker. I make the joke with hitters a lot, young hitters. Even young pitchers, this has to work the same. You give the guys an opportunity. Let them figure things out at the big league level. Like, yes, certain times the minor leagues – is the right place to go develop certain skills. He's done that a lot. He's been sent down a lot. He's been sent to the bull. He's been yo-yoed. Now he's in the rotation. He seems to be stuck in the rotation. Where are you at on Roky Sasaki going forward? Because that splitter is splitting right now.
It really is. And I'm impressed and eating crow because he was somebody that I was definitely out on this year. I'm like, I'm not out on him as a full player. I definitely believe that they can develop him into something. But I wasn't drafting him this year. I'm like, if I lose on him, that's okay. Let's go ahead and revisit down the road. But he has made real advancements this year that have turned him into no worse than a team streamer, if not just a full-on start across all formats, because as you mentioned, that win potential is high. Even though he only has 3, anytime you're pitching for the Dodgers, you've got a chance to win if you just make it 5. You can even go 5 innings, 4 runs, 4 walks, not even pitch that well, and still pop a win. So he's pitching way better than that right now. You can't cut him in any format. You can't really get him out of the lineup too much at all. As the schedule gets tougher, maybe you will find spots where you're like, I don't know if I like him here or here. But he's got the Angels next, a trip to the White Sox. They're an interesting team. They're good. I think they're good is a little bit of an overstatement. I think they're a solid team, but they don't scare you for somebody like Roky Sasaki. So I will be starting him at the White Sox easily. He gets Baltimore after that, and then a trip to San Diego after that. Those are all starts on Fridays, by the way, because of their schedule. He's basically a once-a-week guy, just like he was overseas. And so with their 6-man rotation, sure, you never get the two-step, but it seems like he's a lot more comfortable and the skills and the success is a lot better. Good on you for buying in. I was way too tepid even when he was available, and I'm missing out right now on Sasaki.
Oh, trust me, it's not a lot of shares. I wish it was more. It was like 1 or 2 leagues, but I'll take every little ounce.
Absolutely.
Pitching
especially off the wire. Yeah, because anything off the wire right now just feels like the biggest boon ever.
And to echo you also, I did not want to draft him this season. I was like, nope. I didn't know if he had a role, whatever, many things with him.
Yeah.
Outside of Kaiwei Tang's family, that's probably the saddest guy to see him get traded from San Francisco. I was a big Tang fan. Bullpen starting, whatever. I saw something there. And yep. I also saw a high walk rate, not crazy in that regard, but he's made 4 starts for the Astros as they've needed a lot of help. We mentioned with Arrigetti, they got reinforcements coming. But with Tang, it's been 4 starts, 6 runs, 19 innings. Like, okay, they're very serviceable there. But it's the 12 walks and 21 Ks. That's always been my issue with Kaiwei Tang is walks are troublesome. He's not walking guys. He's actually really good. Shocker. I know. That's how it works. But the strikeout skills are there for Kaiwei Tang. What are your thoughts on Kaiwei? Because I think it feels like he's probably one of the first guys out in this situation.
Sure.
But the skills at least have been serviceable.
I could certainly see that, but let's let the Astros tell us that. And again, not somebody that I'm going to cut as soon as they might do that, because let's give it a week or two and see what happens. I've been having some success with Pete Lambert on my team. In fact, I think I actually cut him off of a team recently, but I got some decent starts on him. He's all right, but I don't think he has to have a spot over Tang guaranteed, and neither does Mike Burrows. So I think even as reinforcements come, if Tang's still pitching well, even though he's fresh out of the bullpen, I don't think he immediately has to go back. I think he is showing enough. He's kind of a better Arrigetti. Remember, we lamented Arrigetti's walks and some of his problems, and we said, where are the Ks? Tang has him, 26% K rate. We can live with the walks a bit more when you're doing that. And he is riding a hot BABIP that will regress, 224 right now. But I don't need him to be a true talent, 257 ERA. If he can be a true talent, 383, which is what his Sierra is, if he can live somewhere around there, upper threes, maybe even low fours with a good whip or decent whip. I won't say good, because as the hit rate regresses with those walks, it is going to be around 120-ish, which is... that's okay. That's an okay whip. But I think he's going to end up being a team streamer type of guy that I like in your 15s and 12s. 10s, I think Tang is probably going to end up being more of just a standard streamer. But right now, I would be holding him. I would not be cutting him after his starts. He gets Pittsburgh tonight. In fact, that game's about to start. Then the Angels after that. Then my lowly Tigers, a game I'm actually going to be at. So I'll let you know how he looks in person. I'm heading over to Houston for that one. So yeah, for the foreseeable future here, I'm riding with Tang. And again, we'll let the Astros tell us that he's out of the rotation. I don't think he has to be the first out, but we do know how the numbers game works. And a lot of times it's the last guy in, first guy out. So it might be him. It should be Mike freaking Burrows, though.
Yes, it should be. I'm full. I write the ALSPT tomorrow for HQ. I've had to look at that rotation so much.
I'm a PT subscriber. I knew that.
I know. I'm just saying it's depressing over there watching when I get to some of these rotations in the AL West. It's
rough. They're so bad. That's why nobody wants to win that division.
I tell Ryan all the time when I get to riding the Rangers portion, I don't even know what to talk about with that team. It's so bad. Like it's the start, the minor leagues are gutted. Like it's just the whole thing so bad. It's so bad.
It's like they have to go all in because they're old. Like they should make trades to improve, but what are they going to give? So they got to like find rental pieces or something. Cause like, they're in a very tough spot. Obviously they need to get healthy. They need to get Corey Seager and Wyatt Langford back ASAP, but they do have to push in. I don't think that they can afford to not try to reinforce themselves at the deadline in any way that they can.
I fully agree. And for the listeners, Seager back Friday, Langford possibly this weekend. So
that's huge.
I got that going as well. All right. The last kind of really surprisingly good starter in May, let's go to Merrill Kelly. But first, I'm going to preface April with Merrill Kelly, like I did with
Littell
earlier. Kelly obviously had the back injury, got a late start to the year, didn't start till April 14th, so it was like 2.5 weeks. And it was 3 starts, 15 earned runs in 14 and two-thirds innings, 12 walks to 9 strikeouts, 5 home runs. Many people were already dropping him. That was a done deal. I think he's getting healthy is where I'm going with this. It's still not domination, though, is the problem. He's made 6 starts since then, 15 runs, the same amount, basically, but in 38 and two-thirds innings, 10 walks to 24 Ks. So the strikeouts, again, an issue, but at least it's been 3 earned runs or less in 5 straight starts. It's been more the Merrill Kelly we've been used to for years, where it's not flashy, extremely serviceable. So where are you at on Merrill Kelly?
I just want to co-sign that and we can move on. I fully agree. He's just the Merrill Kelly that you thought he was going to be coming into the year. He's not a 236 ERA guy like he's been over these last 5. He's the upper threes, low fours team streamer that you bought. He's got 4 straight wins. Well, 4 wins in his last 5. The other was a no decision. But yeah, I think he's regressed kind of back almost to where he's level set. And from here forward, I think he's going to be about a 3.8 to 4.20 with a decent whip and a decent win opportunity. I don't think Arizona stinks. Their bullpen kind of does. I think the offense can support him. The bullpen's the part that I worry about. But they're 31 and 27. You know, they're above 500 teams. So the wins can keep flowing there. I like Merrill Kelly. I've come back around because, you know, after those first few starts, I was like, he's 37. Is he done? Is he just cooked? But you brought up the back, and that's something that I think I forget sometimes too, even playing this game, you know, basically for a living. Like, hey, when someone comes off the IL, it doesn't mean they're miraculously perfectly healthy and nothing can possibly go wrong. It means they're back and ready to go, but they got to work out the kinks. Maybe they got some cobwebs. Maybe they got some residual pain. He had to work through some things, but he looks to be back to regular Merrill Kelly. And if that was something that is valuable in your league coming into the year, I think you can trust him to be that now.
All right, let's go to the bad side of things here. We'll start with Trevor Rogers, who everyone has just thrown into the sun. That's just been where it's gone. And I only put this here for, I guess, one small thought. It's like, yes, there's 4 runs or more in 4 May starts, 21 runs and 18 and a third. Given that last May start was 6 innings, he had 6 innings with no runs before they left them out there to give up 4. in the seventh inning. He went 5 2/3, one run, got the win on Thursday, by the way. So it's basically, the way I'm prefacing this, it's been two decent starts coming in a row for Trevor Rogers. So where are you at on him? Because he's widely available.
As he, I think, should be right now. But let me ask before I answer, where were you on him coming into the year? Did you buy into last year at all?
Too many shares.
Okay, so I was there too. I didn't get as many. The draft, my draft mates protected me. So thanks to all y'all. I cursed everyone every time they took him. Oh, I love Trevor this year. Damn you for taking him. You know, so and so. But thank you, because you saved me. I only got a couple shares. I did not see this collapse coming.
No.
I didn't necessarily think he was a 181. Again, nobody's that true talent, except maybe like Pete DeGrom, Kershaw, you know, the mega studs. But I think he could be a mid threes guy with opportunities to win on a solid Baltimore team. Yes, I absolutely thought that that's what he would be. So I was perplexed to see him completely fall apart. But just like we said with Littell, 180ing around. Merrill Kelly, 180ing around. We are starting to see him pull out of this a little bit. And he did start strong, too. Go back and look at his first three starts. He kind of sandied us, man. Remember Sandy Alcantara's first three starts? They were great. Yeah. Turns out schedules matter. Minnesota, Texas, and at Chicago is what got him on track here, Trevor Rogers. And then it started to get a little bit more difficult, and all of a sudden, he starts losing games. Arizona, Cleveland, Boston, Yankees, Rays. Not all tough teams, but a lot tougher teams than those first three there, and he started to struggle. But like you said, the Toronto start was a little bit of a turning point there. It looks like same old, 6-4. This is why you got to get in the game logs, folks, and you got to see that he was left a little too long there. He got overcooked in the seventh, but that was a damn good start. And then today, when we're recording this on 6-4, he threw very well against Boston, which they're not a great team or anything, but it's still Fenway, and it's a pitcher who was struggling. I think in your deeper leagues, especially where we are turning over every rock, desperate for anything, it is time to kind of jump back in. The problem that you're going to run into is off of this good start, places where he's available, he has a two-step next week. So you're going to have to pay a bit of a premium now. It is a home two-step, it's Seattle two-step. And San Diego. Neither team is a super scary offense. San Diego's offense actually sucks, by the way. Like they're like Philly, where they're like a good team. So you think, oh, be nervous of them, but their offense is pure trash. So you're going to have to pay. That said, I'm open to it. I think where available, I am open to jumping back in right now. I don't think he's going to revert back to last year as much as we want, but can he be like a mid fours guy, which means you can stream and maybe curate that down to a 375, 350 if you're lucky? Yes. So I would take the two step. He gets the Dodgers after that, so that's going to be a benching immediately. And then he gets the Nats after that. That's going to probably be a benching. They are a team that I do not throw lefties against right now. So it is, you want the two-step, but determine that value based on the fact that the following 2 weeks after that, you're not going to use him unless the schedule changes. And I know it's hard to plan ahead, because here's the thing. If he gets pushed off the Dodgers start, it would be an Angels start, which you would love, but you can't know that. But that's why we're not cutting him if we get him. He is going to be a team streamer now for the rest of the month, and we'll kind of assess things from there. I wouldn't jump off Rogers at the first sign of trouble. I would give him a bad outing before I would completely jump, but let's see where this two-step goes before we determine how back in we are.
In full agree. I saw a tweet a couple days ago that the Orioles rotation as a whole, all of them, like Shane Boz has three good starts in a row now. They've shown all the ratios outside of Trevor Rogers basically are sub four ERAs over their last like month. So they're improving. There's things like you mentioned with the Angels, with Maddox, like things can change as the season goes along. So keep an eye on that. I'm going to let you have the floor on this one, because I vented relentlessly on Tuesday night about Robbie Ray, who, God dang, over six starts, 17 walks and 29 out of 30 innings. That's where I'm going to leave it. 21 runs if you really want to get pesky with it. And 8 home runs. Yeah, I said I'd leave it. It's your floor. Where are you at on Robbie Ray? Because, good Lord.
I'm a bit out. This is very scary right now. I do want to acknowledge right out front that this could be one of the guys that we're talking about, just like Rogers, just like somebody that turn around. And he's a higher end version. I think he's like with Rogers, and they're both well above Kelly and Littell, but it's in that same thing where I could see him pulling out of it, but I don't want to wait around and keep taking the hits to do it. Can I cut in a 15? No, I think I only have to bench. He still only has a 4.45 ERA even with this. So I'm not cutting him there, but I do think in like a 10 teamer, I am a bit more open to cutting Robbie Ray right now. That might be a little bit preemptive, but I think one of my biggest flaws in 10 teamers is I hold bankable guys like this too long. And guess what? He also has Washington coming up after a trip to the Cubs this weekend, which we know can go either way if the wind's blowing in or out. Then you get Washington at Atlanta, and then Athletics and Atlanta both at home. That's a two-step, so that's actually not too bad with both of them coming to visit. But the next two, or next three, I'm not that interested in for Robbie Ray. So I would bench in 15s because the SP pool just isn't deep enough to cut somebody like Ray. But 10s and 12s, I am open to a cut if you see somebody you want. I don't know if he's hurt or what's going on. He started strong, but these last several, the homers are what's killing me. And they, I can tell by your voice, they were killing you too. And that's something that really gives me pause and makes me think, is he losing his command due to injury, or is he just having a crap run? Again, don't cut him in 15s and maybe even some 12s, but I don't think you have to hold in 10s.
No, 10s he can go. 12s, I've not opposed to it. I'm pretty relentless this year on cutting guys when they struggle and churning around. But the thing that he reminds me of right now is, let's not forget, yeah, like he made that great run in Toronto, became this ace guy, and he could get back to that, fully agree. What he reminds me of right now is his early Arizona days, where yes, the command's all over the place, and then he just like forces it into the zone and gets crushed after like,
and that's why I never bought in on the Toronto season, because even during the Toronto season, he had a 1.5 homer nine. The homers were always there, and it really wasn't until the second half that he really dialed up. And obviously, he wasn't like pick-upable at that point anyway. But even writing up my rankings, I was like, I don't know, I don't believe this. He's gonna give up homers, and he won the Cy. But I'm with you about the Arizona Robbie Ray is what this looks like right now, and as such, you know the tumult that comes with that, and you know. Justin and I talk about this a lot, like manage to your strengths and skills. Like if you don't like these sorts of ridiculously volatile types, maybe trade in a little bit of upside for a little bit more stability. It's hard to actually, you know, find bankable stability in pitching. Pitching is just volatile in general. But a guy like Robbie Ray has always been guardrail to guardrail type. When it's good, it's the best, you know, you love it. But when it's bad, you're like, I can't keep this in a 20 team league for crying out loud. So that's who he is right now. He's in his Arizona days at age 34 with a lot of injury track record. Good luck and Godspeed, folks.
Agreed. You mentioned Sandy Alcantara earlier on the show. It's just been so hard to watch because you see signs of life. Like in the last six starts, he had two quality starts where he allowed two total earned runs. Then he has an 8-run and a 6-run outing. It's all over the board. Still not walking guys, which is a plus. Where are you at on Sandy right now?
Angry. Because I love Sandy. He's literally one of my favorite pitchers in baseball. And this is why I don't victory lap early, because my dumb ass wanted to go out and start tweeting after those first three starts. Just not in anybody's face or anything, but just about how my guy's back. I'm so excited, blah, blah, blah. But that's why I didn't do it, because that'd be foolish. You know, and it was Colorado, the White Sox, and the Reds all at home. So I should have been a little bit more like cognizant of that and saying like, hey, as much as you like this guy, don't go full confirmation bias and not acknowledge the fact that he beat up some pretty rancid teams. And then the Tigers, when they beat him up, I watched that start, obviously, and I didn't think he pitched horribly. Like, I'm not going to sit here and pretend 10 hits and 7 runs was awesome, but he did kind of get nickeled and dimed, and then it was like nickel, dime, homer, nickel, dime, homer. And obviously that turns into multi-run homers, and it ended up being a horrendous outing. But I'm like, he can rebound. And then he did. Three more good starts after that. So we took a 3.04 ERA into May, and I'm like, he's back. He's awesome. And then that's when the wheels fell off. Baltimore smoked him. You mentioned the two good outings, Washington and at Tampa Bay, which also pissed me off because, of course, I was starting him. But in shallower leagues, I could see some people probably benching him because those are tough teams. And so they missed out the goodies, and then they came back around probably when things went south. Atlanta and Toronto beating you up, that's not the end of the world, but he's supposed to be matchup proof, right? Good Sandy Alcantara is not supposed to be somebody that your team's streaming. But Bubba, I think that's where we're at right now. I think we 100%. Have to start being honest about him and really team streaming him, focusing on home starts and starts against weaker opponents. He simply doesn't have the swing and miss that he needs to be successful starting and start out. It's always been something that's kept him from being a true ace. And I've always been optimistic that maybe he could develop a little bit more strikeout stuff and maybe get away from those 20% rates. But he is who he is. Still a solid pitcher, but definitely not a Cy Young candidate or a mega stud. I think he is just a team streamer right now.
Full agree on Sandy Alcantara. Let's go to Shota Imaniga. All right, I say it different every time, and someone complains every way I say it. I'm not even kidding. I've said it like four different ways in my entire time, and someone says it's wrong. So I say it's Shota.
It's Shota. Yeah, Shota. Yeah, we'll just go with that.
Shota. It's Shota. We're just going to go with that. man, amazing start to the season. A great start to May. First three starts, outstanding. The last three, he has allowed 20 earned runs in his last three starts over about 16 innings, give or take. And it's been the long ball. And that'll happen to Wrigley. So we're
that'll happen to Shota.
Yeah.
Listen. Yeah,
always a concern.
I saw this coming a mile away. Okay. I'm not, I don't get everything right. I get plenty wrong. This one was easy. I did really like him at the beginning of the year, though. And it was Nick Pollock who I think was underscoring it for the Cubs in general. Early season Cubs love their pitchers because of the weather. Because generally the wind is blowing in, it's wet, it's cold, it's nasty. Remember what he did when he first broke in, right? His first, 12 starts or whatever was an amazing run. But even that, I was like, I thought the bottom was going to fall out more. It didn't. He ended up with a 2.91 ERA. But that second half, the homers did eventually come. The bill came due. And then last year was more of the guy I think he is. 3.73 ERA, but a 9.99 whip is truly elite. So there is still value here, even when he's allowing homers. And that's what he's doing this year. He's at 4.37 with the ERA, which is it. That's in range of a 3.73, folks. That seems like it's a big difference, but that's in the range of outcomes. This is the same guy that he was last year, just a little bit on the higher end of his ERA and whip at 4.37 and 1.07. He's the guy he was last year. If you liked him last year, you can like him this year. I think he's a team streamer in your 10s. Maybe you can get off of a few tough starts there. But in 12s and 15s, I just don't see how you really get him out of your lineup. If you have Shota Imanaga, I just don't know how you really bench him. And then next week, have fun with this one, especially if things go haywire tonight with the wind blowing out. Because you have to make a decision if you want to take on an at-Colorado start to get an at-San Francisco start. And then as Justin and I always like to point out, the good one is on the back end on a Sunday. And any one little thing that happens that pushes the schedule now costs you that start. So have fun with that decision. The only silver lining there, though, is that if he gets pushed off of at San Francisco, he will get Rockies at home the early, next week of that following week there. So, I think he is somebody that you just kind of have to roll with the punches. He is who you thought he was when you drafted him. If you thought he was fundamentally different when he started the season, then at the risk of being rude, I will say that you just haven't been paying attention to Shota Imanaga and who he is.
Yep. Full agree on all of that right there. Landon Roop, this might just be me overreacting as a Giants fan, but great month of April. May's been fine, but it's like three of his starts, four earned runs or more. Three of his starts, two earned runs or less. Apparently, his back was acting up last start. Mm-hmm. Bullpen was fine today. Believe that when we see it. Who knows what's going on there? He's been the Giants' best pitcher. 35 yes. Ks and 28 and two-thirds. So I'm not overly concerned, but he actually stood out on the list.
Yeah, I'm with you where I like him. So I'll gas you up on your guy here and say that I think there's some real stuff here. In fact, I think he can be better than what we've seen. Now, those walks are what makes somebody like this volatile. So it's not a guarantee that he'll get better and kind of pitch closer to what I believe his true skills are. I think he's a true talent mid-threes sort of guy. But again, range of outcomes, folks. When you're a true talent mid-threes, putting up a 422 is not that far out of pocket. And so what we're seeing here when you walk this many guys and have a 131 whip is you can run a little ugly at sometimes. If he is healthy, though, he's somebody that I'm running very consistently in 15s and 12s and then team streaming in 10s. But I want Landon Roop on my roster, and nothing is really going to kick him off my roster outside of like probably a few bad starts in a row at this point. He does get the Cubs twice in a row and then Atlanta. He and Ray both get Atlanta in that week that I mentioned earlier. So it's a little bit dicey, but the two Cubs starts don't necessarily scare me if he's healthy. The Atlanta one, that one does scare me because pretty much everyone, Atlanta scares me against damn near everyone except true aces right now.
Full agree on that. Now we get to one of your boys, or at least one of your Tigers. I won't qualify him as your boy.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I don't want to claim him right now.
He's not many guys' boys, including guys in his locker room probably, but Framber Valdez is at least a pitcher we used to trust a lot in fantasy, ground ball rates, ratios, you name it. But in the month of May, five starts, 18 earned runs in 27 and a third, 11 walks, 22 strikeouts, so not even a K per inning, and the walk rate's down to 42%. The ground ball rate, 42%. Right. Where are you at on Framber Valdez? Because this guy, it's streaming right about now.
Exactly. And it's a little nerve-wracking right now because, like you said, this is supposed to be the bankable of all bankable. In fact, the guy I always link him with, the righty version of him, is your boy Logan Webb, right? They are the two workhorses of our era. They usually don't have too many strikeouts. Webb excluded last year when he popped up a 26% rate. That was awesome. But he's back down to 20 this year, and he's going through some of his similar struggles as Valdez. So again, they're once again doing the Spider-Man meme pointing at each other. However, I will use Webb's recent start as the reason why maybe you should not go too crazy with moving off of Valdez. Right when we were about to say, hey, maybe we got to make some moves on Webb and make some, you know, push him down the rankings and start benching him, he drops six perfect innings on Milwaukee and then ends up with seven innings of one hit ball, one walk, four punchies at Milwaukee and says, hey, remember who I am when I'm healthy. I know what I'm doing out here. And I think Valdez is that same type of guy. The second that you start to think, what the heck is wrong? Does this guy actually suck? He drops, you know, three, four good ones on you. And in fact, we've seen that both times he had a dud this year. I call a dud anything that's five plus earned runs because you cannot salvage that from an ERA standpoint. Even if you finish the complete game, you got a five ERA. So anything over five earned is a dud. And he has two of those this year. Eight earnings at Minnesota and seven earnings against Boston. The subsequent starts after both were really good. He had four excellent starts after the Minnesota one, and then after the Boston one, he was very good at the Mets, meh against Cleveland, but then great at Baltimore and decent enough at Chicago. 6 2/3, four runs against the White Sox, including two runs in the seventh, so I'm not going to kill him for that one. I think it's still a set it and forget it. You mentioned that maybe we're bordering into some streaming with him. Maybe in your shallower leagues, I can see some team streaming just because you might have landed on some new guys this year that are dominating for you. Okay, that's fine. I'm still not cutting Framber Valdez anywhere, though. I don't think you were suggesting that, by the way.
No, I'm just saying,
like, don't overreact here. I know he can be frustrating, but he and Logan Webb are still guys that until I see anything further, I'm going to trust them and look up at the end of the year and see where they're at. And I'm not off of that right now with them, so they do still remain in the lineup pretty firmly.
Yeah, and a lot of these guys we're talking about on the bad side of things, these guys you drafted with some pretty good capital. So
exactly.
The whole drop conversation, not saying you can't drop these guys, but the conversation needs to be had, essentially, of we're not just, you know, adding them off the wire and dropping them later. A couple more for you here. Jose Soriano, a guy I was heavily invested in draft season.
Hey, nice work, man. I loved him for years, and I quit him too early, man. I'm so mad at myself. I'm glad, glad you stuck with him.
Bloom had a Bloom board sometime during the offseason that things really stood out for Jose Soriano. So I was like, at the price tag, we'll take a chance. April went great. Mm-hmm. May's looking a lot like Jose Soriano at the moment. 19 earned runs, 33 and a third innings in his last six starts. That includes June 1st. 22 walks to 36 strikeouts. So there's those walks. But the Ks are still very much there, which gives me a little promise. And one last thing I'll mention. Out of those walks, 13 of them came in two of the six starts. So right. It was two horrific ones and four that are palatable. So where are you at on Jose Soriano?
Honestly, again, like I said, I loved him and I just didn't stick with him this year, much to my detriment, because when you add it all up, you're still very happy with how things have gone, because he started so strong that of course he was going to have some regression. I don't love seeing six, seven and four walk games. That is a bit nerve wracking. But that is the nastiness of his stuff, right? We talked about it with Walbert Urania and how he's kind of the next Soriano. And sometimes these guys are so dang nasty that it's just hard to reel in their stuff. He's got these sinkers. You know, it's like Dustin May can be like that sometimes. Yeah. He himself is actually pitching kind of really well recently. But, you know, when that sinker moves so much, they have trouble reining it in. You know, I think Tampa Bay was the first team I heard really popularize the throw it down the middle and let your nastiness, you know, do the work, stop trying to nibble, because if you nibble with its natural movement, if you're aiming for the corner, then it's going to dive out and be, you know, 3 feet in and be easy to just take for a ball. I think Soriano's in a little bit of that right now. So hopefully Mike Maddux can reset him and say, get back to the middle of the zone, at least as your aiming point, and let the movement of your stuff take it where it needs to be. I'm not too deterred by this. One of those big walk starts was against the Dodgers. I'm never gonna hold a bad start against the Dodgers against anybody. And he did only allow one hit. So even though he did give up six runs, it actually could have gone a lot worse if he'd given up a few more hits. Yeah. But the other was against Colorado, and there's obviously no excuse for that. I'm not even sure everyone on the Rockies knows that you can get a walk with four balls. So you should not be walking seven Rockies in any way, shape, or form. You can't be doing that. At least they're so inept that they only got two earned runs off of him in 4 2/3 with seven Ks. Bottom line is, this is some natural regression that we expected. There could even be more. If you look up at the end of the year and you got 185 innings of a 350 ERA and, you know, anything under a 125 whip, because with those walks, I think the whip can still trickle up a little bit more. You're going to be happy. You got him post pick 300 a lot, didn't you, Bubba?
Yeah, and very cheap.
So, options, like, so good. You don't have to hold him to his April standard, folks. You paid for anything sub four would have been a boon. He's still plenty in that realm right now. I'm not daunted at all by this in terms of spot starting him or anything. It is a full set it and forget it until we see maybe like 3-4 bad ones in a row. Because right now we haven't even seen 2 bad ones in a row. They've been bad one, bounce back. Bad one, 2 bounce backs. And then the bad one recently, and we'll see how he bounces back from the 7 walk outing. So he keeps bouncing back when he has a tough one. I'm fully in on Jose Soriano. I'd actually go try and buy right now because I think some people might, in a trade league, think that they lost their sell high opportunity. And sure, you're still going to give them more than draft day capital, but you don't have to pay premium ace, which is what they probably would have been asking 4 or 5 weeks ago. So I would actually consider going and looking and seeing what the price is on Soriano if you need some pitching. And the Soriano manager has, you know, extra there.
I like it. I like that a lot. A couple more here. Bubba Chandler. Usually when I hear Bubba sucks, I think they're talking about me, but that has been a full Pittsburgh Pirate situation right now. It's been... Well, 3 earned runs or more in 3 out of his last 4, but it's just been walks like time and time again. And the last few starts, he's looked better is what I would say. The results might look a little different, but trust me, in our Discord, it's just a constant, do we start him? Do we start him? It's like, I didn't deal with it, so it's not my problem. But it's scary. So where are you at on Bubba Chandler?
This goes back to, you know, managing to your style. If you didn't want a player like this, you should have known what you were getting into. This is a right-handed Robbie Ray type early career, right? He doesn't have the accolades of Ray, so we don't even know that he can do it the way we know Ray can, at least. But that's kind of what we're dealing with here. And I know people wanted to say that he was out of the woods with the 11 Ks at Toronto. No, he wasn't. He still had 3 walks. Like, they just didn't cash anything in, and he allowed 2 hits. It's a good outing, but, like, he still is Bubba Chandler. And the simple fact is until he figures out some more consistent control, it's just going to be this sort of agonizing, do I start him or not? The beauty this year, and the first time in a long time, is that with a Pittsburgh Pirates starter, you actually have some win equity. You know, they're actually a pretty damn good team. When they're facing righties, because they're a very left-handed lineup, that's where the strength comes from. So when they're facing righties, they're favorites regularly. So you can maybe scoop some cheap wins. He's only 2-6. It's not like he's, you know, piling up the wins. But at least you can fall back on that. If you want to chase wins and strikeouts with him, you can. But it is really a start-to-start situation. I want no part of at Atlanta this weekend, of course. But then he gets Miami next week. Okay, good. But then at Colorado... Sure, we clown the Rockies. They're not doing a whole lot this year. But do you really want Bubba going there and giving them a bunch of free passes? We just saw that they took 7 walks against Soriano. Yep. They could probably do the same against Chandler. So you don't want that one. So basically, I don't want to use them this week. I'll use them the following week against Miami, then off the following week at Colorado, and then back on against Seattle. So standard team streamer right there in any format. And Tens, he's probably just a regular streamer. Like if you wanted to cut him, if you have him right now and you wanted to cut him in a daily moves league, let somebody else maybe pick up that Atlanta landmine, get killed, and then get him back for next week. I don't think you have to be holding Bubba Chandler in a 10.
No, you definitely do not have to hold him in a 10. Tanner Bibee, talk about a guy that is full tilt because he actually was getting at least quality starts for the most part, getting wins in April. In his last 6 starts, though, 19 runs, 33 2/3, 28 Ks to 8 walks. It's the Tanner Bibee experience in full force. Where are we at on Tanner Bibee right now?
You nailed it. It's the Tanner Bibee experience, and it's maddening. And this is one, you know, I just said, like, manage to what, you know, what players are and what you can deal with. He doesn't strike me as somebody who should be this volatile, though. That's why it pisses me off. With Bubba, it's right there. You know, he's a walk machine. Okay. With Robbie Ray, it's right there. He's a walk machine with health issues, and he's mid-30s. Okay, the warning signs are there. I don't understand why Bibee's so annoying. And you want to talk about win equity. He's on one of the best teams in baseball, and he's 0-7. That's crazy. Now, that's bad luck, obviously. I don't think he's, like, earned to be 0-7, even with a 4.57 ERA and a 1.30 whip. He should have stumbled on a win somewhere because they have an elite bullpen and a competent lineup. But the homers are the real problem right now. You were underscoring that, and they've just gone up each year, and they create that volatility. That's the quickest way to tarnish an ERA and the quickest way to damage a start. You're dealing through 4. How many times do you see this? Guy's dealing. Looks untouchable. Walk, scratch hit, 3-run homer, the start is not necessarily ruined at that point, but it is completely fundamentally altered. And they were dealing for 4 innings. I never, ever cease to be amazed by that because you see it happen 100 times a year where a guy was just, he looked perfect through 4. And then that's when that fatigue starts to hit and the third time through coming around, and boom, that's when Bybee starts to get in trouble. So the problem here is, though, how actionable is it? Are you going to cut Tanner Bybee? In what format? I don't even think you're cutting him in a 10, if I'm being real. I know it's 0-7 with a mid-4s ERA. I don't know if I can get away from him, though. Maybe that's me, at my fault on him. Maybe I'm being too aggro there. 12s and 15s, I know you can't definitely get away from him. But in 10s, maybe, if the right guy is there. But I don't think I'm immediately just trying to get rid of him, because the second you do is when Bybee flips the switch and goes on a 7-start genius run, too.
Well, the biggest thing, like you just said there, is if you're going to drop a guy, make sure that the ad is worth it. Don't just drop a guy.
Exactly. Don't drop. You feel that, like, sometimes it's fun to drop somebody to feel like you're punishing them. Like, get off my team, I hate you. But then you're looking at the Kumar Rocker piece of crap that you picked up, and you're like, well, why did I do this? You know? So, yeah. Like, make sure you're getting somebody valuable if you're going to cut Bybee. And in a 10-teamer, there could be. 10-team wires are richer for sure.
Yep, definitely could be. And just need Bybee to get off that Bailey Ober plan. We'll be just fine.
Yes. That's exactly who he's pitching like, and that's not a compliment. This is pitching like bad Ober.
Yeah, you know it's bad when you get an arm injury and you're blaming the baseballs and want to sue baseball for it. That's a whole other story right now with Bailey Ober. Yeah. George Kirby, last one I got on the list here. Man, oh man, like you're frustrated. People are frustrated with Tanner Bybee. George Kirby, you used to think he's the whip machine. Not so much.
Now he's whipping.
He's allowed 20 earned runs in 33 innings with 30 Ks. The strikeouts are okay, but I don't trust him anytime he takes the mound right now, Paul.
I don't either. And this is actually one of my favorite pitchers in baseball. You know, it, very much like I started that same thing with Sandy. So they're kind of parallel here. But at a higher level, you paid a lot higher price for Kirby and a lot higher expectation for Kirby. So this is kind of like Sandy plus or Sandy negative, if you will, because it's even worse. But that's how I'm feeling. And yet, much like Bybee and even to a higher degree, I don't think it's actionable. I just can't. I mean, because when you add it all up, right, as frustrating as he's been, it's still a 4.04 ERA and a 1.28 whip. I'm not going to sit here and try to sell you that that's awesome, but it's also not terrible, right? And it was a 2.84 ERA before these last four outings. Now, the question is, are these four outings indicative of something? Is he hiding an injury? Is he working through something? What's going on? Or is it just a 4-start blip that, hey, it happens and he's going to get back on track? That part's unknowable unless we get information from the team. I just don't know how I get away from him despite some of the struggles here. The one thing that has made up for the K drop, because he's dropped from 26%, which was awesome last year, to 20%, very much similar to Logan Webb, at least he's had a corresponding ground ball rate jump up to 54%. Sure. Now, the defense behind him is not turning that into outs at a great clip. He has a 323 BABIP, so it hasn't been super beneficial, but at least he's not giving up homers. Because with the ball in play that much and more hits, the three-run homer could really, really kill him. He has avoided that fate. I hope he can work through it. Like I said, with Kirby, I can't see myself jumping off this for, you know, multiple months still. I don't even think I would take him out of my lineup anywhere right now. He's got a two-step next week. I'm definitely running that. After that, it's Boston. They couldn't hit me and you, it seems, right now. Yep. And then after that, it's at Cleveland. Which of those, even in a 10, which of those would you not start George Kirby for? I think I got to run for all of them.
Probably run with it and pray is what that one comes down to. I got one more to add to the list that was mentioned in the chat, and it's funny because you just bagged him, so I think I know your answer here. Kumar Rocker was a question in the chat.
He used him as my joke player. Whoops. Yeah,
it's all good. I have my ups and downs with him, and that sums up his month of May. It's been like 3 starts. He allowed 0 runs over basically 20 innings. Then he allowed 12 runs in the other 3 starts. But the worst part to me is it's not just that. It's the 15 walks to 22 Ks and 29 in the third. And that's where it gets frustrating with him. So what are you seeing with Kumar Rocker?
Bubba Chandler, basically.
That's like very fair.
Type vibe. I mean, you know, not necessarily a one-to-one. He doesn't quite walk as many, but it's that same sort of volatility that we're talking about where you really want to think that the good starts are him emerging, you know, especially when he goes into Coors and drops 7 2/3 scoreless. You're like, that's awesome. That's great. Because again, no matter how bad the Rockies are, anytime going into Coors, it is difficult. So I give him credit for that for sure. Immediately comes back with 5 innings, 4 runs against Houston. Okay. 6 shutty against KC. Are you open to that sort of volatility? Like I said, I did use him as a joke player just because honestly, he was kind of the first name that I was thinking of off the wire, but that is what you're going to be dealing with. And you need to determine if you're okay dealing with that sort of yo-yo. Looking at his upcoming schedule, I see him as a buy right now. He gets Cleveland this weekend. again, as good as they are, their offense does not scare you. You will run streamers against them. KC, in KC, you're definitely running a streamer like Rocker. Then it's Minnesota who doesn't scare you too much. And then it's a two-step to end the month at Miami and at Toronto. And I'm not sure that either of those teams necessarily scare you. I think Toronto's better than Miami, of course. But yeah, the schedule is there to run somebody like this. I'm not going to promise you that they're all going to be good, folks. He has an 8% strikeout minus walk ratio. That is terrible. But if you're looking for a streamer, I do think Kamar Rocker has 12 and 15 team streamer viability. I still don't think I'm going for him in tens, though, even with the friendly schedule.
No, maybe spot start here and there in tens.
But, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, 12s and 15s, 15s especially. But 12s, I'll see myself being roped into a few of those, yep. I can already tell. But I guess the moral of the story through the pitchers we discussed is pitching is extremely volatile, folks. Mm-hmm. So buckle up is the best thing I can say.
You know, and I used a phrase a few different times, like actionable. What's actionable? Not every start's actionable. And like one of the downsides of our technological culture, we're both old enough to have played fantasy baseball pre-internet, right? Yep. And there were probably some benefits to that where you didn't make as many hasty moves because you weren't getting every up to the second, you know, yep. piece of data to react to. And I think we are overreactive these days. And I mentioned that sometimes you can be underreactive. That's me in tens. I think I hold too long sometimes. But I think people want actionability. I don't know if that's a word. I think they want to see something actionable in every start, and it's just not there. Guys have ebbs and flows. You know, a million moons ago, Eno and I had John Smoltz on the podcast before he went, old man yelling at Cloud. And he had great insights about how you're going to have your A stuff for 10 starts. You're going to have your F stuff for 10 starts. And the 10 in the middle are going to kind of determine your season. If there are 10 more good ones, you can have a Cy Young season. If it's 5 good, 5 bad, that's a pretty good, and that sort of stuff. So you have to understand that over the course of a year, when you're looking at the guy every 5 days and trying to figure out what's going on, you got to be able to deal with the ebbs and flows. And I'm not even just talking the volatile Rockers and Bubbas of the world. Even your studs are going to have some ups and downs. It's not everything is actionable. You got to try to figure out what is actionable and be smart. Don't be afraid to make moves, though, right? Just because I'm saying not everything's actionable doesn't mean you got to sit on your hands either. As Scott Pianowski likes to say, if you never make a cut that you regret, you're being too tame. Like, doesn't mean you go willy-nilly and just slice your roster up all the time, but you're being too cautious if you never have a cut that you go, damn, that guy turned it around right after I cut him. I maybe should have held on a little bit more. You got to be active. You do want to make moves, but you got to try to be smart about it. That's why I've noticed I reference the schedule on just about everyone. Anytime somebody asks me a start sit, who are they facing? Because that's what drives us right now. Their core skills, strikeout minus walk. I love all the advanced stats, Bubba, but give me strikeouts minus walks. There's still nothing stronger about correlating strikeouts than swinging strike rate. I like the stuff plus. I like all that sort of stuff. It's not correlative, though. It doesn't tell me anything. You know, you can have the best strikeout guy toting a 94 stuff plus, and you can have a 20% strikeout guy toting a 111 stuff plus. So use the strikeouts minus walks, use your schedule, and just try to make moves. Just try to play the schedule there and don't overreact to everything that happens. You make a bad cut, push forward. You know, it happens. It's the game. So it's a 6-month grind. That's why this game is so hard, because we have to grind it out for 6 months. But to me, that's what makes it fun. I like the daily grind of baseball.
Full agree. And that's when we talk about it on Bubba and the Bloom all the time. K to walk percentage is our go-to with pitching. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the number, the first one we look at on almost every guy.
I love the Bloom boards. Like you guys are always like, you're not afraid to go into the second, third level stats, but you guys always get back to the heart of the core stats. Yeah, because that is, at the end of the day, the most important. On the offensive side, too, Ks and walks can get you a lot, right? If they're striking out at a 30% rate and walking at a 5% clip, I don't care, how hot they're running. They're probably going to have a cold streak coming at some point. I'm looking at you, O'Neal Cruz. You know, that's kind of his profile. So strikeouts and walks just tell so much. So as many great stats as we have, don't be afraid to go back to the blocking and tackling basics of strikeouts and walks.
Full agree. Well, Paul, we'll wrap it up there. Before we head out of here, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on.
Hit me up over at Fangraphs. That's going to just be fangraphs.com, and then go over to the fantasy side. We actually don't have a rotographs.com. I think it's fantasy.fangraphs.com if you want to be, but you can just go to the main page. Like I said, I was supposed to have my SP rankings out today. I am a day behind. They will be out Friday the 5th. It'll be an update there. I do my SP chart Monday through Friday. Justin and I do a 2-start episode every Friday, so we'll have that up as well. I link that in my SP chart, so you can go listen there at the beginning of the week. And again, Out of the Park Perfect Team, if you're interested in that, hit me up. I don't want to give the spiel again, but if you want more details on it, it's a really fun game. If you like fantasy, chances are you would like Perfect Team.
Perfect. Go check it out. And you probably already all follow them, but if you don't, at Spore. Paul, thanks for joining me as always, man. Good catching up with you.
Thanks, Bubba. It was great talking with you.
All right, everybody. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 858. Catch you all next time.